Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's the Empowerment Network. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Roan, coming to you live. It's Community Conversations with my main man, George, Brother George. We got a show for you today. Ready? There is no better love than the love for self and kind. And it's the Community Conversations, part 12 of What Slavery Did to Us, the Age of Change and Afrocentricity. Y'all better listen to these shows. Brother George is here today with another episode for us, and we graciously thank him for coming through each week to give us a new segment. We're going to start talking about the NAAEA because y'all need to learn about this, because you get the practical principles, then you'll know exactly what you need to do to change your life and your community. The NAAEA serves the purpose of ensuring that the needs of the African-American community are met through the development of programs and services that educate, inspire, motivate, and empower the African-American community. That means you. By doing what? Teaching the five pillars of the peace concepts, that's politics, economics, athletics, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. And that's right, this is the education piece, but it's also culture. The NAAEA is a responsible organization that is intended to resurrect our community and get us back in the proper standing that our ancestors will be proud of us, that they fought, bled, and died for us, that we can come through and make things right again. Brother George.
Yes, sir. I'm here. I'm waiting, and I'm ready.
All right. Hey, this is a great thing here. All right, so let's get started with, as usual, the Willie Lynch moment and the impact of Willie Lynch.
Well, today I'm going to make a statement, and all of this relative to Willie Lynch, and when you put it in its proper perspective. Now, I'm going to quote from a book by Dr. Joy DeGruy, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, and it's in the chapter called Crimes Against Humanity, Unsanitizing American History. Studying history in American schools, we learn about the excesses of the Roman Empire, the viciousness of Stalin's Soviet Union, and the brutality of the Nazis. We learn about the barbarity of the Mongols and the cruelty of the Huns. You can easily add to this list the Japanese during World War II, the Viet Cong, and the Hutu Nation. Currently, we have Serbia, we have Hussein's Iraq, and the Taliban, and Osama bin Laden, to name but a few. Certainly, all of those listed above are responsible for their fair share of atrocities. But missing from this list is one society that is responsible for some of the most gruesome crimes against humanity in history, the United States of America. While the powers that be in America are happy to talk about other crimes, they seem to be reluctant to truly confront their own. With respect to the genocide of Native Americans and the enslavement and later oppression of those of African descent, the history we in this land learn has been greatly sanitized. In many regards, this was the hardest chapter of the book to write. For weeks on end, my research took me to narratives, stories, and reports that knotted my stomach, moved me to rage, and brought me to tears. How do I make real the pain and suffering of our ancestors? How do I give their experience appropriate recognition? How do I bring to people's awareness the vileness of those that perpetrated these crimes? Now, I wanted to put that into perspective, because she was talking about the fact that for most of us, it's a very difficult subject to talk about what whites have done to the Native Americans and African American society here in America. It's a very uncomfortable topic to talk about, because some of us have white friends and we feel like, well, they didn't do it, and you know, it's that and other. But we have to understand that all of this is systematic. And so just because you don't physically do it yourself, it does not mean that the system is not in place to keep these types of things going on. So to me, this is attached to an extension of the Willie Lynch impact. And that's my Willie Lynch impact segment for today.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much. Hey, let's talk about it. Let's learn about ourselves, work for ourselves, and let's discipline ourselves to get to a place where we can unite ourselves, that we can become the best people that we can be again, once again. All right, Brother George, let's talk about Dr. Molefe Asante and the Marxist theory of cultural hegemony. Give it to me.
Well, first of all, I wanted to kind of lay a little bit of groundwork, because the 1980s was really a time period that a lot of our people began to really wake up and learn a lot of information about the contributions of African people to world civilization and world activity and world progress, period. I mean, we learned a lot. And the reason why that took place is because, one, you had an introduction to making African historical accomplishments, and African culture was beginning to be made a topic of research, and a topic of participation, and a topic of appreciation for the things that we've done. And nobody did it better than Molefe Kente Asante. Now, Molefe Asante was born Arthur Lee Smith Jr. on August 14th in 1942, and he was an African-American professor and philosopher. He is a leading figure in the fields of African-American studies, African studies, and communication studies. He is currently professor in the Department of Africology at Temple University, where he founded the PhD program in African American Studies. He is the president of the Molefe Asante Institute for Afrocentric Studies. Asante is known best for his writing of the book Afrocentricity, a school of thought that has influenced the fields of sociology, intercultural communications, critical theology, political science, the history of Africa, and social work. He is also the author of more than 66 books and the founding editor of the Journal of Black Studies. Now, he also used a theory that came from Karl Marx, and when Karl Marx was studying, dominated societies, and the theory, he used that theory to help define what was going on with the repression of African American accomplishments and African accomplishments and African cultural norms and all of that, why they were being stepped on. and not included in the overall cultural picture of our society. In Marx's philosophy, cultural hegemony is the domination of a culturally diverse society by the ruling class, who manipulate the culture of that society, the beliefs and the explanations, the perceptions, values, and mores, so that the imposed ruling class worldwide becomes the accepted cultural norm. The universally valid dominant ideology which justifies the society's political and economic status quo as natural and inevitable, perpetual and beneficial for every social class rather than as artificial social constructs that benefit only the ruling class. This Marxist analysis of how the ruling classes, the bourgeoisie, establishes and maintains its control was originally developed by the Italian philosopher Gramsci. Now, what Marx was saying there, because I know that there was a lot of scientific talk there, what he was saying there was that in the history books, you mostly see things that are talking about something connected with Europe. You rarely find anything about China, even though we have Chinese Americans. You rarely see anything about Japan and you have Japanese Americans. You don't have anything about Arabs. You don't have anything about Africans except for the Negro, which is a created entity within the slave-making structure, was they made Negroes. So you have that part of history, but for the most part, the most accomplished group are the Europeans. And when you look at television commercials, when you look at movies, all of it is a part of the cultural hegemony that he was talking about. And so what Malife Asante did was he took that and he reversed the trend. And he began to put forth a lot of images of African people to include us within the cultural makeup and cultural fiber of the United States of America.
My people, the foundation has been laid. Let's begin to build upon it. You're listening to NAA Community Conversations, What Slavery Did to Us, with our great brother George. Brother George, let's go into Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu, the first to challenge the educational system in relationship to black males.
Now, Jawanza Kanjufu, very laid-back brother, you know, that I don't really think they predicted that he was ever going to come out and be so critical of the educational system, but he proved it wrong. Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu, 66 years old, was one of the first educators to look at how black males are educated in the United States educational system. The educational consult wrote the groundbreaking book, Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys. According to Kanjufu, the conspiracy against black males is fundamentally rooted in the need of a white minority to control the world's far greater population of black people and people of color. I think he's talking a little bit about what Francis Cress Wilson was talking about. In addition to the overt racism, Kanjufu includes in his indictment all teachers, parents, and especially adult black males who fail to provide the support and discipline needed to keep black boys off the streets and in the classrooms. Kanjufu sees black males as caught in a self-perpetuating cycle of failure, in which the absence of stable, successful adult role models ensures that young black youth will do poorly in school, turn to the streets, and father yet another generation of boys without adequate male role models. Now, I think I spoke a little bit about that when I was when I talked about political language, and I said that we need a dad figure. And that is exactly what he's talking about. He's talking about that we need more dads. Now, keeping black boys out of special education, he said that we also need to try to keep our sons and daughters out of special education. And he also wrote Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys, Volume 2, Lessons from History, which is a great book that you could get that's on the elementary and the advanced edition for like junior high school and high school. Raising Black Boys and Changing School Culture for Black Males. Jawanza Kanjufu.
The education of our children is so critically important to changing our future. Let's move on to Dr. Shaka Musa Barashango, the brother who brought the Bible to life.
I say that because myself and Brother Marvin, we know Reverend Dr. Shaka Musa Barashango on a personal level. He bounced my kids on his lap. He, he met Marvin's wife at the time. And, you know, I mean, we know Dr. Barashango on a personal level. A theologian, an author, a scientist, a researcher, and an analyst. Dr. Barashango is a historian in the Black liberation struggle and a citizen of the Republic of New Africa. The brother turns those he lectures to into whole beings of mind, body, and spirit. He puts biblical characters and lands in perspective, while providing a wealth of information about the mother and father force known as the Creator. Just like I said, he learned to bring the Bible to life. Now, what I'm going to do in honor of Dr. Barashango is I'm going to read his complete oath that he gave to the ancestors. O ancestors, blacker than a thousand midnights, African ancestors, it is to you, we, your children, give respect and honor. O ancestors, we call upon you and welcome you in this place. African ancestors, let your presence fill this place. O ancestors, who have been purposefully excluded from the history books, so that the world would not know of your greatness. O African ancestors, we gave civilization to the world. O African ancestors, who gave the arts to the world. O African ancestors, who gave music to the world. O African ancestors, who gave the science to the world. O African ancestors, who gave the mathematics to the world. O African ancestors, who gave medicine to the world. O African ancestors, who gave literature to the world. O African ancestors, who gave philosophy to the world. O African ancestors, who gave God consciousness to the world. O ancestors, we thank you for devoting your life to make a future for us, your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Now stand with us, strengthen us, guide us, teach us, and protect us from the snare of our enemies. Rise up, O African ancestors, and let our enemies be scattered. And give us the wisdom and the boldness to deal with our oppressors and those who would hinder the liberation and empowerment of our people. Rise up, O African ancestors, and live in us. We will not fail to honor you. We will not fail to respect you. We will not fail to hear you. And we will not betray you. Ashe, ashe. Now, I'm going to give you a statement that I remember by heart, because Dr. Shaka Musa Barashango used to say it before each of his lectures. He said, "Blessed are those who struggle. Oppression is worse than the grave. It is better to live and die for a noble cause than to live and die as a slave." And we used to call him Doc. I know they said his nickname was Baba, but we used to call him Doc. Dr. Shaka Musa Barashango.
There it is. I'd just like to say this. The Bible, along with many other religious and spiritual systems, are critical tools in the liberation of our people. Know the work, people. Know the work. Dr. Barashango, may God continue to shine his light on you. All right. Brother George, tell us about Dr. Richard King and melanin.
Well, Dr. Richard King is probably the foremost authority that I know of in the black community on melanin. And melanin was an important topic because most of us didn't understand that there was something special about it, even though we had it, and we really, most of us, never really heard of it. We never really got an education on what it actually was, and it was because that most of us have it. Now, Dr. Richard King, he was born in November of 1946, and he died December of 2013, was a psychiatrist and prominent of the melanin hormone. Dr. King was born in New Orleans, Louisiana in 1946, and he was the eldest of five children, and he was raised in Watts, Los Angeles. Now, if you remember when I talked about the mass migration, that one of the migrations was west, and so there were a lot of our people that lived in the south, and they migrated to the west, and apparently his family was one of them. Dr. King was a psychiatrist, historian, and melanin pineal gland scholar. He was a visionary and highly sought after lecturer whose many published works included his books. In 1990, Dr. King published African Origins of Biological Psychiatry. 4 years later, Dr. King published his second book, which was Melanin, A Key to Freedom, which is currently in its seventh printing. And in 2005, he authored the book Why Darkness, the Power of Melanin in the Brain is Important. A study of ancient African history reveals an early African definition of the human melanin system as a whole body black melanin system that serves as an eye to the soul to produce inner vision, true spiritual consciousness, creative genius, beatific vision, to become godlike, and to have conversation with the immortal ancestors. The single purpose of an ancient African education was to provide knowledge and development of the will of the student to allow salvation, which is freedom, of the soul from the fetters, the chains of the physical body. That's a quote from George G.M. James in Stolen Legacy. Now, what he was getting at with the melanin is that melanin is like a substance that does more than just make your skin dark. It is like, it's very similar to the photosynthesis that happens with plants. It actually helps you to create, to be improvised on the spot. Like when you see a basketball player do a move out of nowhere, Like, that's his melanin kicking in. That creative energy is your melanin that does that. And so, you know, that was Richard King. He described a lot of those different theories on melanin, which is very complicated. It's not complicated once you understand it as a black person, but for some other people, it probably would be much more deeper. But in the ancient world, they called it the secret elixir. But that's Dr. Richard King and melanin.
We should love, honor, respect, and appreciate our melanin. It is all we got other than each other. All right, Brother George, let's move on to Dr. Naeem Akbar, one of the founding fathers of black psychology.
Brother Naeem Akbar is another one that we met along the road in person. And Naeem is a very impressive brother. You know, he talks real fast, but he's very knowledgeable and he's very, you know, he's very impressive as a human being. Publisher, psychologist, psychology professor, and public speaker, Naeem Akbar was born in 1826 in Tallahassee, Florida. Originally given the name Luther Benjamin Weems Jr., Akbar changed his name in 1971 after joining the Nation of Islam. Akbar attended the Florida A&M University Laboratory School from grades K through 12. That was apparently a high school. Graduating in 1961, Akbar attended the University of Michigan for the completion of his BA, MA, and PhD degrees in psychology. Prior to attending the University of Michigan, Akbar lived in completely African-American social environment. His freshman year of college marked the first time that he had really been around whites. At the University of Michigan, Akbar was active with the Black Action Movement, strikes that closed down classes for 3 weeks during the late 60s. After receiving his PhD, Akbar accepted a position in the psychology department at Morehouse College. There, he instituted Morehouse's first black psychology course and eventually developed probably the first black psychology program at a historically black college or university. Within 2 years, he became the chair of that department. Akbar left Morehouse after 5 years to work with the Nation of Islam headquarters in Chicago to start their office of human development. After 2 years, Akbar joined the facility at Norfolk State University, again instituting courses in black psychology. In 1979, Akbar accepted a facility position at Florida State University. In 1971, Akbar became active with the Association of Black Psychiatrists, the largest black mental health professional organization in the world. He has served on the association's board for numerous terms and was elected as president in 1987. The association has bestowed all of the most prestigious awards on Akbar due to his professional contributions. Akbar continues to teach a specialist course on the psychology of the African American at Florida State University. In late 1980s, he formed his own publishing company, Minds Productions. And Naeem Akbar consults and to bring teaching to a wider audience. Now, Naeem Akbar, like I said, he was he did a lot of things. And just like I was saying, in the 80s, a lot of things took off in the 70s. But in the 60s, things sparked with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and all that. In the 70s, things started to fire up. And in the 80s, a lot of proof things were happening. In other words, it's like we are a legitimate people and we have a complicated past just like anybody else, and you're going to put us into the colleges and universities and be studied just like anyone else. And Akbar was one of the key ingredients to that happening. Naeem Akbar.
There it is. We continue to share with you so many works of our greats. I encourage you to join this list by getting involved in your community. You're listening to NAA Community Conversations with Brother George, telling us about what slavery did to us and how incredible we are and the many accomplishments our greats have. Here we go. Dr. Wade Nobles, another founding father of black psychology. Yeah, I got that right.
And you are exactly right. Because Wade Nobles and Naeem Akbar were best friends. And they came along in the exact same time period. And they were members of the Association of Black Psychology together. As a matter of fact, they started it together. And so Wade Nobles was more of a cultural type psychiatrist. In other words, he studied a lot about African culture and African religion, and he was very astute in those type of things. You should listen to his lectures. I mean, Wade Nobles is seriously bad. For over four decades, Dr. Wade Nobles has studied classical African philosophy, Kemetic, Twa, and Nubia, which that's in the Nile Valley, and traditional African wisdom traditions, the Akan, the Yoruba, the Bantu, the Wolof, the Dogon, the Fon, and the Lu and the Lubra, etc., as the grounding for the developing of an authentic black psychology. Dr. Nobles is a founding member of the Association of Black Psychologists, and former national president from 1994 to 1995. He is a professor of Africana Studies and Black Psychology at San Francisco State University and the author of over 100 articles, chapters, research reports, and books. The co-author of the seminal article in Black Psychology, Voodoo or IQ, An Introduction of African Psychology. Dr. Nobles is the co-founder and the past executive director of the Institution of the Advanced Study of the Black Family and Culture Incorporated, a freestanding, independent, community-based, nonprofit, black think tank and scientific educational training and research corporation based in Oakland, California. Dr. Nobles defined power as the ability to define reality and to have others respond to your definition as if it were their own, and that the most important reality to define is the meaning of one's human beingness. Seizing the power is especially important and essential in the study, excitement, explanation, and interpretation of African American reality. The challenge of fully understanding the nuance and subtle distinction of African and African American reality is found in the adaptation of African-centered language, concepts, and terms. That's Dr. Wade Nobles.
Man, we have so many great professionals, and Brother George continues to tell you about them, so stay tuned. Join us each Saturday for Empowerment Saturday, 2 p.m. You don't want to miss it. It's conversations by African Americans for African Americans, 2 p.m. each Saturday. Join us. You can listen live, or you can join us on the web. Brother George, share with us about Professor Asa Hilliard III, the founder of the National Black Child Development Institute.
Now, Asa Hilliard is another brother that was very expansive in his research and his studies, and he studied and taught on a lot of different topics. But the major one was his concern for our children and how they were educated. About 200 members of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization gathered Tuesday morning in Luxor, Egypt, at the tomb of Thutmose IV to commemorate the passing of one of the organization's founders, the renowned multifaceted scholar, Dr. Asa Hilliard. Dr. Asa Hilliard passed, and so they had a ceremony for him at one of the great places in the world, you know, at Luxor, Egypt, in front of the tomb of Thutmose IV. This was a great brother. Whatever the cause of his death, Hilliard joined the pantheon of ancestors doing what he loved, teaching about the contributions of ancient Egypt to human civilization in the place that he loved, the Nile Valley. He will always leave a legacy as the celebrated conductor of the modern African-centered educational movement. There is no educational scholar who has impacted the way we educate young people more than Dr. Asa Hilliard, says Malife Asante. Now, that's saying it's not coming from Malife Asante, a professor of African American studies that I just talked about at Temple University. He inspired generations to see ancient Egypt as the classical civilization of the black world. I have known him for more than 35 years, and during that time, he has been a lightning rod for social, educational, and political transformation. Hilliard, a teacher, historian, educator, consultant, historian and activist, has produced numerous articles and technical papers on African-centered prodigy, curricular, cultural styles, political, public policy, child growth and development, and African history. He has also consulted with various school districts, universities, and government agencies on those topics. Hilliard, the founding member of the National Black Child Development Institute, has written and co-written several books, including SBA, The Reawakening of the African Mind, The Maroon Within Us, Select Essays of African American Community Socialization, and The Teachings of Pitahotep. That's Brother Asa Hilliard, another giant.
Go out and research the works of our greats. You deserve it. It's the NAA Community Conversations with Brother George. We're talking about part 12 of what slavery did to us, and we're talking about the age of change, and that is Afrocentricity. It is us. Brother George, tell us about Dr. Renoko Rashidi and the global African presence.
Well, I'm going to say this before I get to Dr. Renoko Rashidi. Some of these giants are in a time period that's either a little bit before the 80s or a little bit after the 80s. But the 80s has such a great impact. I have so many that I put some in with the 80s and some in with the 90s that you'll find out about later, you know. But I'm basically trying to pass this knowledge on and do what I can to keep things in its proper perspective. Now, Renoko Rashidi, I'm going to give you a quote that's one of his famous quotes. History is a light that illuminates the past and a key that unlocks the door to the future. History is a light that illuminates the past and a key that unlocks the door to the future. Now, fester on that. Think on that. Rinoco Rashidi is a historian, research specialist, writer, world traveler, and public lecturer focusing on the African presence globally and the African foundations of world civilization. He is particularly drawn to the African presence in Asia, Australia, and the Pacific Islands. In 1999, he coordinated a historical tour to India called Looking at India Through African Eyes. In March of 2000, he toured Vichai, Levu, and Fuji, while in July of 2000, he coordinated an educational tour to Aboriginal Australia titled Looking at Australia Through African Eyes. Let me see. As a public lecturer during the past 20 years, he has made major presentations at more than 110 colleges, universities, and scores of public and private schools, libraries and bookstores, churches and community centers. On the international circuit, he has lectured in Australia, Barbados, Belize, Canada, Costa Rica, Egypt, England, France, Ghana, India, Japan, Namibia, the Netherlands, Russia, Thailand, Trinidad, Venezuela, and Zimbabwe. Rashidi's presentations are customized and suitable for all audiences and ages, are living, engaging, and vital. In other words, like, it doesn't take much for you to get a hold of what Rinoco Rashidi is talking about. He makes his lectures very understanding and very easy for you to understand what it is that he's talking about. As a scholar, Rinoco Rashidi has been called the world's leading authority on Africa, the African presence in Asia, the leading authority on Black people in Asia. And so, you know, like, that was Rinoco Rashidi's thing. Rinoco Rashidi went around the world to prove that our presence was everywhere on this planet. This was a remarkable scholar, you know, that all of these people should be in the history books that we read about, but probably hardly any of them are in the history books. Why not? Rinoco Rashidi.
You ask why not, and I will tell you, because our greatness has been hidden. And there's so much history that we need to learn. I'm just going to shift right on over to Dr. Ivan Van Sertima to tell us about We Came Before Columbus.
Yes, sir. Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. I've never personally met Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, but I have been to two of his live lectures. And Dr. Ivan Van Sertima was the first Afrocentric, I'm going to call it during that time period, Afrocentric book that I read in my life was They Came Before Columbus. And it was very impressive when he wrote it, because what he did was he proved something that a lot of people were talking about. He proved that the African was on this continent and in these lands long before the Europeans came. Now, in the future, I'm going to show you some information that proves that we was here before any of the other people that were here too. But for right now, he didn't go that far. He said that he needed someone else to continue to do research, you know, because his thing was mostly in Europe, and so when he started, when he ended up, you know, finding out that it was so much stuff here in the Americas, which he was from South America, he didn't know that, and so he was getting up in age, and his specialty was mostly in Europe, so he was asking one of the other, you know, some of the other scientists to do research to check into that, but. Let me talk to you a little bit about Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. Throughout his career as a scholar and author, Ivan Van Sertima worked to transform the way people viewed and taught African history. Van Sertima was born on January 26, 1935, in Kitty Village, Guyana, when it was still a British colony. After completing high school, He worked as a press and broadcasting officer for Guyana Information Systems. In the late 1960s, Van Sertima did weekly broadcasts to Africa and the Caribbean as a journalist. Now, once again, this is showing you the remarkable accomplishments of some of our giants' past. You know, all of the things that they went through to just get to the point where they could be a scientist. And I'm going to continue. Van Sertima began publishing before he came to the United States. In 1967, he published a dictionary of Swahili lingual terms. While earning his graduate degree, he published his most famous work that came before Columbus in 1976. The book introduced his argument that people of African origin came to Central and South America long before Columbus arrived in 1492. The book achieved widespread attention in the African American community and gave a different insight into African history. In 1977, Van Sertima received his master's degree and became an associate professor of African Studies at Rutgers University in 1979. In the same year, he founded the Journal of African Civilizations, editing and publishing the journal for decades. That was a great journal, and it's a lot of books that's a part of the Journal of African Civilizations. It's not just a journal. It's a series of books that he wrote, and one of the books he wrote with Rinuccia Rashidi, which was one of his good partners, which was the African presence in early Asia. He transformed how African history was viewed and taught. Its articles describe early African advances in agriculture, mathematics, arts, engineering, architecture, writing, medicine, astronomy, and navigation. Van Sertima also discussed many of the topics in his several published books, including Blacks in Science, Ancient and Modern, Black Women in Antiquity, 1984, The African Presence in Early Asia, 1985, Great Black Leaders, Ancient and Modern, 1988, and Egypt, The Child of Africa, 1994. His research has discussed the early African civilization, which had disappeared from history. In 1999, Van Sertima republished The African Renaissance, early essays which discuss the scientific contributions of Africans. He also published critical essays questioning the work of previous historians and authors about the African continent. In 1974, Van Sertima was asked to join UNESCO, the International Commission for Rewriting the Scientific and Cultural History of Mankind. In other words, they have screwed up the history of mankind so bad that it needed to be rewritten from back in the 1700s. Remember when I was telling you that a lot of stuff that Europeans did, they wrote a lot of books about Africa in the 1600s and 1700s. And they wrote themselves into the great accomplishments of Africa. And these giants, our giants, came along, and they had to do tremendous research, and many of them died penniless trying to bring this knowledge to our people. And that's why I celebrate them in the way that I do. And one of those was Dr. Ivan Van Sertima.
Come on, Brother George. We came before Columbus. Question everything that you know about history, or you can read the works of our greats. It's up to you. Brother George, tell us about Chick Anta Diop, the Pharaoh.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, it's a reason why they called him the Pharaoh. Dr. Chick Anta Diop was the greatest historian of the 20th century. And that's who I was talking about in the last interview, that I said it's a couple of heavy hitters that's coming, and these are the two, Dr. Chick Anta Diop and Théophile Obenga. I'm basically going to be talking about them within the same context. But I'm going to give you a background on Chick Anta Diop first, because he was the master and the greater of the two. Dr. Chick Anta Diop was considered to be one of the greatest scholars to emerge in the African world in the 20th century. The years of his life from 1923 to 1986 were years of transition and change for African people and the whole world. I am fortunate enough to say I knew Chick Anta Diop as a friend, colleague, and master teacher. When alive, he was Africa's greatest thinker. He is recognized as the world's foremost African scholar, using the disciplines of linguistics, cultural and physical anthropology, history, and the knowledge of chemistry and physics, which his research required. He forged new theoretical pathways and revealed new evidence in the quest to uncover the ancient origins and unifying principles of classical African civilization. Dr. Diop's view of Egypt as a black civilization earned him the despise of European historians. However, his views were grounded in research in the hard sciences, which he used to demonstrate the melanin content of mummified remains. In other words, Dr. Chick Anta Diop was the one that came up with the process to determine how much melanin was in a mummy's skin, was in somebody's dead skin. Apparently was unchallengeable because he used it to wipe out the nonsense that these scholars were saying that the mummies were white. Now, Dr. Diop was not only an innovative theoretician, but as a pragmatist, he published works which outlined programmatic suggestions for the political and economic unification of Africa. Let me see. I saw him alive at the conference of the Berlin Conference. And at the Berlin Conference, that's when he and Théophile Obenga proved their case Africa was a black society. Now, you see, a BBC news report of January 11, 2010, announced the discovery of a complex of tombs near Egypt's great pyramids, Khufu and Khafre. The tombs, made from bricks of dried mud, date back to 4,500 years. The chief archaeologist heading the Egyptian excavation team stated that evidence from the site shows that the workers were employed for 3 month stints, and the tombs, which date from the 4th and 5th dynasties, were those who died during construction. Additional evidence also revealed that approximately 10,000 workers who built the pyramids had eaten 21 cattle and 23 sheep sent to them daily from the farms in the Delta and Upper Egypt. Scholars in the excavation team seem to think that the suggestions that the farmers sent animals were not paying their taxes to the Egyptian government, but were sharing in one of Egypt's national projects. The recent archaeological digs, however, confirm what the late Senegalese physician and Egyptologist Cheikh Anta Diop and Congolese philosopher, Egyptian and linguist Theophile Obenga has said all along. The pyramids of Egypt were built by free men, not slaves. That means there's no Jews build no pyramids. For decades, Egyptian civilization had been represented as slave-based. The idea that slaves built the pyramids has been a persistent one in scholarship. It works to devalue the skill and sophistication involved in the construction of the pyramids, and it also tars ancient Egypt's civilization as an oppressive and slave-holding empire. Upon review of the archaeological evidence, the excavation team concludes, too, that the tombs reinforce the theory that the pyramids were built by free workers rather than slaves. Haas declared that the location of the workers' tombs beside the king's pyramid show that they were not slaves. If they were slaves, they would not have been able to build their tombs next to the king's pyramid. Archaeological discoveries of ancient Egyptian civilization are invaluable in shedding light on an obscure period of world history. They are also important in exposing the mythifications that have gone on in the discipline of Egyptology by scholars who are adverse to accepting that the root of present Western knowledge and civilization lies in Africa, not Europe. Scholars including Diop, Obenga, and Cornell's Martin Burnell have tackled head-on mythifications in the field of Egyptology. And those were two of our greatest scientists.
Dr. Diop and Dr. Obenga, simply the best. Brother George, we thank you for another wonderful segment of What Slavery Has Done to Us. I'd like to see if we can end this session with a tribute to Dr. Barashango, and if we could get that oath again before we leave, I would be greatly appreciated. In the meantime, join us on Saturday for Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. We thank you for listening. We thank you for allowing us to be a part of this wonderful show. And also, we like to say thank you for listening. Brother George, turning it over to you.
Oh, ancestors, blacker than a thousand midnights, African ancestors, it is to you, we your children, give respect and honor. Oh, ancestors, we call upon you and welcome you in this place. African ancestors, let your presence fill this place. Oh, ancestors, we have been purposefully excluded from the history books so that the world would not know of your greatness. Oh, African ancestors, We gave civilization.
I go to the movies and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me no.
We gave mathematics to the world. Oh, African ancestors, we gave medicine to the world. Oh, African ancestors, we gave literature to the world. Oh, African ancestors, we gave philosophy to the world. Oh, African ancestors, we gave God consciousness to the world. Oh, African ancestors, we thank you for devoting your life to make a future for us, your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Notwithstanding us, strengthen us, guide us, teach us, protect us from the snare of our enemies. Rise up, O African ancestors, and let our enemies be scattered, and give us the wisdom and the boldness to deal with our oppressors and those who would hinder the liberation and empowerment of our people. Rise up, O African ancestors, and live in us. We will not fail to honor you. We will not fail to respect you. We will not fail to hear you. We will not betray you. Ashe, ashe.
And there it is. Peace.